All right, glad you're with us, Sean Hannity Show. Toll-free telephone numbers, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. By the way, our thoughts, our prayers go out to all our friends, North Carolina, South Carolina today. It looks like it may get a little bit into Georgia as well, depending, and, of course, Virginia. Look, it's scary for most people. You see the scenes, people moving in one direction, having boarded up their house. You know, they're told to evacuate. It's anxiety producing. They're going to be in some gym, some place, some church somewhere. And, you know, everything in their life is disrupted and it's a change. And, you know, everyone just take a deep breath. And the good news is that you're going to come out of this. You're going to have your health and your life and your future intact. And I know you're worried about your possessions. And you know what? Let me give you one example. I'm watching everybody in the media because they always just want to politicize everything. And the president talked about the efforts to help Puerto Rico. It's now been a year since two hurricanes hit Puerto Rico, Irma and Maria. It was one of the largest post-disaster reconstruction efforts ever in history. And after the hurricanes, there was zero electricity. There was zero water. There was no telecommunications and no transportation system at all. Now, today, all of that's changed. A year later, a lot can happen. Were the people convenience? Yeah. Did we lose a lot of innocent life? Yeah, we did. It's horrible. That's why you've got to take these storms seriously. I don't know when you're having natural disasters, when you have such poor infrastructure to start with, you know, to then have to begin the rebuilding process, it is very, very tough on people. But, you know, we can learn lessons from each one of these hurricanes, Katrina being one of them. You know, if you go back in Katrina, I think it was about 30 or 35 years prior to Katrina, the Times-Picayune gave a step-by-step what would happen if New Orleans was ever hit with a Cat 3, 4, or 5 and the levees broke, which they always knew the levees weren't built to withstand a 3, 4, or 5. Anyway, so everything that they had said, talking about massive floodings and everything, even down to the Superdome and the problems that would be associated with there, it all turned out to be true. I did make some calls and got some information. Apparently, there's been a lot of pre-positioning of necessary items by the government. They're pre-positioning truckloads and truckloads of food and water and medicine and supplies and blankets and cots and baby formula and pillows and just the bare necessities for people that might have their homes ultimately even destroyed in this hurricane. Everything that we're hearing from Joe Bastardi and everybody else, I mean, this is the real deal. It's going to hit. It's a slower moving hurricane than Hugo, as many of you in South Carolina and North Carolina remember. And that means that it's not going to be a quick hit and out. It's literally going to make landfall. And they anticipate that the storm is just going to slow to almost a halt. And it's going to be dumping, you know, up to 30 inches of rain on top of the surge that's going to happen with it. And there's going to be a lot of flooding and a lot of destruction of property here. It's incalculable at this time, which is why if you're in one of the coastal areas, if you haven't gotten out, you got to get out, you got to get inland, and you've got to take all the safety precautions necessary. You still have time to do it. If you've been hesitant up to this point, I'd urge you to get in your car and join the convoy. And the other good news is the American people are the most generous people on earth. We're going to see the devastation, whatever it happens to be, and everybody's going to want to help because that's just who we are. Nobody's going to be asking what your politics are. Americans want to help their fellow Americans. If you look at what happened, the loss of life was so sad in Puerto Rico. They had their entire electrical grid that was barely working to begin with totally fail. It was an across-the-board failure. And within 60 days, they had 50% power for people. And within 90 days, about 70% of power for people. And then now it's 100% customers. The same with their water systems. They were inoperable. And literally, water service went to 70% in 30 days, 96% in 60 days. Considering the infrastructure was old and outdated and not of the best quality, But, you know, just to give you an example of what the, well, how does America react after such an incident like this? Well, if you look at the dollars, and this was released back in August, the amount of money that had been spent in the year that since the hurricanes hit Puerto Rico, $1.39 billion federal grants were approved for nearly 500,000 homeowners and renters. $1.8 billion in low-interest disaster loans from U.S. Small Business Administration for nearly 52,000 businesses. You know, $21 million in claims by the National Flood Insurance Program. $7.9 million for survivors who lost work due to the hurricanes. And then you have $100 million for 7,000 households in the Transitional Sheltering Assistance Program. And on top of that, $20 billion obligated by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for disaster-related community development block grants to Puerto Rico. $3.4 billion in FEMA public assistance funding obligated. $79 million for increased enforcement of a stronger building code. $213 million in community disaster loans. I can go on from here, but I think you get the point. And the increases in stockpiles of food and water around the island, you know, they've added hundreds of generators, literally, you know, millions and millions of liters of water and millions of meals so that they're there and available in case, of course, where, you know, they're right up there in Hurricane Alley. And just like, you know, if you look, there's like three hurricanes now in the Atlantic. One looks like it might make its way to Texas again. Remember the one in Houston? It kept going around in a circle and just dumping more and more and more rain on a regular basis. It's just tough. Look, I know Samaritan's Purse. I know the Red Cross. I know all these other groups. They're going to be there and available to help. Every American, you know, can sympathize, has empathy for what the people are now going through. Hang in there. You're all in our thoughts and prayers, and we're sorry that it's come to this and that you guys are in a bad spot today. But we'll do everything we can on the other side of this to help. That we can promise, as long as you stay safe, which is the most important thing right now. It's not often. I tell people to pay their taxes. Not often I'm saying, yeah, listen to your government. Yeah, I'd listen to the government right now. Your government officials, you're in a coastal area, get out. This is the real deal. We'll check in with Joe Bastardi coming up at the bottom of the hour. You know, it doesn't matter, though. I mean, I've watched the politicizing, well, look at Puerto Rico. And I'm like, I just read you all the billions and billions of dollars that we spent, the aid that we that was given, the infrastructure that was some of the poorest, you know, in not the country, but in the world even. And all of that has been rebuilt. And it's been in only a year's time. It's hard to build infrastructure in a year where 99% of people are getting the power that they need when everybody did not have power. But, you know, that's pretty much the way it goes here. We have some good news on the economy today. I guess good news for the economy right now, 55 days out of an election, is always bad news for the Democrats. Now, I've said many times on this program, and I've got the tapes to prove what happens in every election cycle. And that is, we always see the same playbook. Republicans are racist. Republicans are sexist. Poor Mitt Romney had binders of women's resumes, people he wanted to hire. You know, if you elect Republicans, black churches are going to burn. And don't forget, Republicans don't even want to count you in the census. And it's like my father was killed all over again. But it's the same tactics every 2 and 4 years. Republicans are racist, sexist, misogynistic, that they're homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, and that Republicans want dirty air and water. They don't want clean water. They don't want to breathe clean air. They want to kill your children, and they want to take your grandma, Paul Ryan, will throw right over the cliff because we don't want to pay for our health insurance. It's the same stuff. The one thing that Democrats can't run on, and it was kind of laughable to watch Obama try, to say, well, my 8 years of president really, the 2 years of Trump's economic success, that really is because of me. I'm like, no, it's not. It's in spite of you. It's so deep inside. It bothers him so much because the numbers speak for themselves. Now, I might be the only one in media that reminds people, and I did it all throughout 2016, It is etched into the inner cranium of my brain. I could do it in my sleep. The lowest labor participation rate, worst recovery since the 40s, lowest home ownership rate in 51 years, the only president to never reach 3% GDP growth in a year ever. Never. No other president. He accumulated more debt than every other president before him combined, a guy that ran on the idea that $9 trillion in debt is irresponsible and unpatriotic. Well, he left with $20 trillion in debt. He's the guy that gave us 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty. Everything, every one of those statistics is now reversed. 4 million fewer people on food stamps, millions fewer in poverty. The highest labor participation rate. We now have more jobs available than we have people claiming for unemployment insurance in America. You know, the Washington Post had to admit today, and I guess if it's good news for the economy, the forgotten men and women, that what the 2016 election was about, it's bad news for Democrats and the liberal news media. Anyway, the Census Bureau reports. Now, what do they always say? It's always old versus young. Rich versus poor, black versus white, all the demographic breakdowns. And these are always tax cuts for the rich, right? How many times have you heard that in your life? Well, anyway, this is the Washington Post quoting the Census Bureau that the middle class income in this country has just hit an all-time record. Well, wait a minute. Nancy Pelosi wants her crumbs back in 55 days if she becomes speaker. She wants to raise taxes. She's running on raising taxes. They're running on keeping Obamacare. You know, keep your doctor, keep your plan, pay less. How did that work out? They're running on abolishing ICE and open borders. They're running, and Maxine Waters admitted it. They keep telling me, don't say it. Don't say it, but I'm going to say it more and more. Impeach, impeach, impeach. Middle class income rose to a record level in 2017 as the national poverty rate declined, as the benefits of the Trump economy lifted the fortunes of more Americans, according to the U.S. Census report. The median U.S. household income earned $61,372 last year, meaning half the families in the country brought in more income than this and half earned less, crossing the $61,000 mark. Signals the American middle class may finally have earned more than it did in 1999. Wow. Good news for the forgotten men and women. Even Jimmy Carter is warning his fellow Democrats that if they keep going left, that it could torpedo their chances to recapture Congress. He said independents need to know they can invest their vote in the Democratic Party. And he's worried, you know, about this move to very liberal programs like universal health care. He said he's urging his party to appeal to independents. Well, they're not listening to him. And I don't really think they're going to listen to him, to be honest. You know, 88% of financially successful people read at least 30 minutes per day. Now, reading is the ultimate secret to success. And lots of world-class successful people credit their success directly to reading. Now, if you're like me, the list of books you want to read or those people suggest you read is never ending and it's always expanding. Now, the problem is there's no time to read, right? Well, our sponsor, Blinkist, has solved your long list of must-reads once and for all. Blinkist is the only app that takes thousands of best-selling nonfiction books and breaks them down to their most impactful elements so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes all on your phone. And with Blinkist, you will expand your knowledge and learn more in just 15 minutes than you can almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere. Now, I just downloaded the Blinkist app. I love it. I like to listen when I'm in the car or when I have free time, if I'm just cooking dinner or something. It doesn't matter. Now, my personal recommendation, check out Greg Jarrett's new book, The Russian Hoax. Now, there's so much to know about this Russian investigation, and Blinkist, they make it simple and easy for you to get these critical elements from the book. 5 million people are now using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time, and you can get started today. And right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Hannity to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled BLINKIST.com/Hannity to start your free 7-day trial. You can cancel at any time.
Blinkist.com/Hannity.
As we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941. Sean, I mean, when you got numbers like this, where now the middle class income has now risen to a record level in 2017, it takes away the argument, doesn't it, that they want their crumbs back is somehow going to be effective? I mean, I thought the Democrats cared about working men and women. And that they have a monopoly of compassion. When you break things down demographically, what has happened? It is conservative policies that have helped the American economy perform better than at any point in over a dozen years. It is record low unemployment for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, 65-year record low for women in the workplace, 55-year low for youth unemployment. 14 states have record low unemployment. Now we find out that, oh, in spite of the lies and the talking points, that these are tax cuts for the rich. No, the middle class income has now risen to a record level in 2017 as the national poverty rate declined. 4 million fewer Americans on food stamps, 4 million more jobs, more manufacturing jobs than we had seen in the last 30 years. And the 61,372 median U.S. household income signals the American middle class has now earned more than it did finally than it did in 1999. Those are Donald Trump's policies. This is conservative policies. These are tax cuts. This is ending burdensome regulation. This is incentivizing big business. Look at the unemployment, or I'm sorry, the minimum wage, $14 at Walmart, Target, Costco's and all these other stores, starting pay. Not saying you have to turn it into a career job, but you can. It's a start. And with all of that said, what happened in the 8 years of Democratic Party power? Do you see what is at stake? They want it to stop. Good news on the economy is bad news for their attempt to get their power back.
Hurricane Florence is fast approaching. It's going to be here over the next 48 hours. And they say it's about as big as they've seen coming to this country and certainly to the East Coast as they've ever seen. We'll handle it. We're ready. We're able. We've got the finest people, I think, anywhere in the world. FEMA and first responders are out there. They're going to stand through the danger of this storm. Get out of its way. Don't play games with it. It's a big one. Maybe as big as they've seen. And tremendous amounts of water. The storm will come. It will go. We want everybody to be safe. We're fully prepared. Food, medical, everything you can imagine. We are ready. But despite that, bad things can happen when you're talking about a storm this size. It's called Mother Nature. You never know, but we know. We love you all. We want you safe. Get out of the storm's way. Listen to your local representatives. South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, it's heading your way. It's probably not going to change path. It's going to be hitting pretty soon. Be ready and God be with you.
All right. The president warning about Hurricane Florence, now making that beeline straight to the South Carolina, North Carolina coast. And it looks like a direct hit on Wilmington and all through South Carolina. Now, even into parts of Georgia, as we speak, the official weatherman for the Sean Hannity Show, he's with weatherbell.com. Good friend of ours, Joe Bastardi, is with us. The one thing he said from early on is this is not going to change course. This is a pattern storm, meaning that it's one of the historical patterns. And when it gets, when those conditions are what they are, that you know exactly where it's going, and it hasn't deviated since.
Yeah, we think it's going to be near Cape Fear, probably maybe a little bit slower, come in very late Thursday night, Friday morning, and then just crawl. What will happen, Sean, is that there will be a handoff from the upper ridge that's guiding the storm now to another one that will be upper air high pressure system that will be located over the Great Lakes. So the storm will respond to that and then start turning southwest down the coast. Where I did make a change in the forecast this morning was after it reached the coast. Instead, we were always taking it west-northwest along the South Carolina, North Carolina border. I think this could come down as far as Charleston and, in a worst case, Savannah before turning in. The biggest place of concern, though, if we're going to center this, is between Cape Lookout to about Georgetown, South Carolina, including the Grand Strand. These areas, and centered on Cape Fear and Wilmington, these areas are probably going to have unprecedented damage. And I say
so
that.
So let me see if I can say this.
Well,
so basically, is hitting Wilmington and Myrtle Beach, and then you're saying it's going to spin south towards Charleston.
Yeah, and it could get all. It could. This morning, I thought it could get to Charleston or Savannah, and tomorrow morning I'll look at it again. I don't like getting yanked around by computer models. Okay, so we keep one forecast. Now that it's within a couple of days, we're honing in. We haven't changed the idea of it going to Cape Fear. But after that, it may come down the coast, a very unusual track, in fact, an unprecedented track there. But we've seen storms out in the middle of the Atlantic move southwestward when they're blocked. And so this one's going to get blocked in there. But let me get down to the nitty-gritty here about what is going to happen and why folks have to just take this seriously. Harvey went inland about 75 or 80 miles in a tremendous amount of rain, but the wind died down. The wind will die down with this some, but because it'll be so close to the coast, it will still maintain hurricane intensity until the final landfall, which may not be until Sunday, because it may cross Cape Fear and then start southwest down along the coast, which means all the coast gets raked from Cape Lookout all the way down to Charleston by hurricane winds. And after it gets through in a 1-2 day period, it's not going to be 3 to 6 hours. It's going to be up to 2 days in that Wilmington area, just pounding away. It takes on the Grand Strand and this area, Myrtle Beach. Now, Myrtle Beach was devastated during Hurricane Hazel. Hazel will be a stronger storm as far as pressure and wind goes, but the amount of rain at Myrtle Beach with this, Wilmington, Cape Fear, Wrightsville Beach, you're looking 2, 3, maybe 4 feet of rain in some places over a 2 to 3 day period. So the combination of all this is what would make this storm the costliest in history in the Carolinas.
Pretty scary. It looks like they've had an evacuation of all these coastal areas, and we can see people making their way out. One of the biggest problems, on top of the massive amounts of rain, because you were very adamant that the storm is going to slow as soon as it makes it on shore. If you're right, and it's going to be Wilmington and Myrtle Beach, and then it's going to make its way down to Charleston, maybe even as south as Savannah, that's a very different pattern than I think most people would expect. They would expect the storm to come in and then sneak up the East Coast towards New York, but that's not going to be the case here.
Well, eventually, once it'll go all the way back into northern Georgia, and then it'll get picked up in the westerlies, a couple of the mountains. A week from today, we may be getting rain from this up in the northeast part of the United States. But we have to deal with this right now. And here's the thing. Let's say you're in Myrtle Beach, okay? Usually your wind starts out of the northeast and east-northeast and goes to the northwest when a storm goes by. You remember Matthew, you folks in Myrtle Beach, Wilmington, right? This is different. In Myrtle Beach, the wind's going to start from the northwest. And the storm, because it's coming down, will then shift to the northeast and then the east. So the worst part of the storm is coming behind it, the storm surge. And because it's moving so slow, it's not going to be just a few hours. It could be 12, 18, 24 hours where the wind is gusting to hurricane force. And I could see, you know, you're out Cape Fear, Wrightsville Beach, Wilmington. You can look at this thing, there may be 2 days of hurricane conditions.
That was the problem in Houston the last time. I mean, Houston, that storm, remember, it kept circling around in circles and going back and back and dumping even more water and more water on and massive flooding. And then you had the storm surge. How much property damage would you anticipate leading into this is going to take place?
Well, I thought I made a guess on Neil's Coast to Coast yesterday, $50 to $100 billion in there. But the fortunate, I don't estimate property damage like that, but I was just saying in terms of when I'm looking at this and the slow movement and the amount of rain, but in terms of the storm itself and where the storm's moving, the one fortunate thing, if you want to look at it that way, is this is not Houston, it's not New Orleans, where you have a much greater area of population. You have the population spread out. That being said, the amount, if this thing comes down as far down the coast as I think, so that it's still a hurricane, going by Myrtle Beach and heading southwestward, then the Grand Strand is going to be under hurricane conditions for 12 to 24 hours out of the east. And that's going to just keep piling water back. So,
last question for today.
Tremendous amounts of property there.
When do we start getting the high winds and the storm surge and the rain? When does it really begin?
Well, that will be tomorrow night when we're on together. This thing is really going to be rocking from Cape Lookout all the way to Cape Fear. I mean, they're going to be getting battered.
This is the real deal. This is going to be a real storm, real damage.
Yes, sir.
And as one mayor just said, you stay at your own risk. There's going to be nobody there to help you. So I hope people take heed. They still have time to get out, you know, find some safer place. Look, and the president, I know, has pre-positioned trucks with food and water and medicine and baby formula, cots, blankets, pillows. And the American people will step up, too. But I'm just telling everybody, take this seriously. But all right, Joe Bastardi, weatherbell.com. Sir, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it. And thoughts and prayers go out to all of our friends. I know it's a pain in the you know what. I know it's a pain. Just protect your family. Get your important papers. Get the stuff that matters. Get your family photos. Get your valuables. Get out. And you know what? We'll pick up the pieces after. The American people will be there. They always are, because it's the greatest country on earth. You know, let me give you some examples of how the left is so unhinged today. Trump derangement syndrome. It is now like jump the shark. You actually have a Trump-hating college professor that shot himself to protest the fact that Donald Trump is president. And I kid you not. A Vegas professor facing criminal charges, he decided to protest President Trump last month by shooting himself while on campus. College of Southern Nevada sociology professor, some guy named Mark Byrd, facing felony weapons charges after discharging a gun within a prohibited structure, carrying a concealed weapon without a permit, and possessing a dangerous weapon on school property. Now, the Journal Review noted that the police report states while waiting for authorities to arrive, he said he had shot himself in protest of President Donald Trump. They arrived on campus. Multiple people saw Byrd stumble out of the bathroom, where he shot himself in the arm, 22 caliber handgun, before collapsing. Authorities found $100 taped to the mirror inside the bathroom with a note for the janitor. Good grief. Everyone's losing their minds. We have some new text messages which struck in Page. Sarah Carter, David Schoen, and Greg Jarrett will join us coming up. We'll have that on Hannity tonight. You know, there was a piece in Breitbart that I think is a little scary, but somewhat of a public service, because everybody wants to always say that conservatives incite violence. No. If you listen to Maxine Waters and Cory Booker and get in their face and follow them into restaurants and shopping areas, and then you watch what happened to Pam Bondi and Secretary Nielsen and Sarah Huckabee with Sanders with her family and her children. Now, a lot of the list didn't include some of the reports being phoned into Susan Collins's office, which I'll get to in a second here. But, you know, they actually have a list of the attacks and threats that have taken place in the last month alone. You know, about one guy in Santa Monica, you know, spit on for wearing a Trump hat, or a September incident where a Broadway star literally, where's John Wilkes Booth when you need him? Or the media and leftists harassing Devin Nunes and his family. And a Trump fan booted from a bar because he was wearing a Trump hat. Or an arsonist hitting Wyoming GOP headquarters. We have a story about that. A TV writer hoping Kavanaugh's daughters go to school without being shot. I mean, and I can go on and on and on. And the list is just out of control. It got so bad. I hold the people that commit acts of violence responsible. I'm not like the left. Left likes to blame conservatives. Remember, infamously, you have then President Bill Clinton after the Oklahoma bombing of the federal building. Oh, that Timothy McVeigh inspired by talk radio and people like Rush Limbaugh, etc. It was just baloney. The people that decide that they're extremists and do violent, horrible things, that's them. I never said that Bernie Sanders was responsible for the idiot that shot Steve Scalise and shot up that baseball field. And shot those two officers that bravely stopped him. People are responsible for their behavior, but words do matter, and the intensity and the insanity of what we're hearing today, it's going to keep going. There is some correlation, although you can't say that words cause people to do things. Anyway, we have a Trump-hating nut job in San Francisco who've been driven around the bend by all the vicious rhetoric that they're hearing day in and day out 24/7. Anyway, a man arrested on suspicion felony assault charges because he attempted to stab a Republican congressional candidate with a switchblade over the weekend in a part of San Francisco. And on Sunday night, 3:45 in the afternoon, deputies working at a fall festival alerted to a possible knife attack at one of the vendor booths. Deputies arrived at the booth, made contact with the victim, who happens to be a Republican candidate, Rudy Peters. Anyway, they found this guy, and yeah, he had the switchblade on him. He had to fight this guy off. You have a Democratic congressman issuing a tepid response, calling on Trump haters not to kill Republicans. I mean, this is like every day now, and it's getting more insane every day. You know, they ignore the story in San Francisco, but on Tuesday, you have a Democrat acknowledging in that San Francisco case that the Democrats' attempt to demonize Trump has undoubtedly contributed to this. I don't hear a peep from anybody else. Anyway, at least the other candidate in San Francisco, the Democrat, posted on Twitter that he was glad to hear that the Republican opponent, Mr. Peters, is okay, and he discouraged the use of violence in any disagreement, political or otherwise. And he said, my opponent was attacked at his campaign booth in Castro Valley, and I'm glad to hear he's okay, but it's never okay to use violence to settle political disagreements. Thank God he was okay. Now, in the wake of a report that we just gave to you, we now have an NBC News report that campaign pressure on Susan Collins of Maine to oppose the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh has now escalated to vulgar phone calls, shipments of wire hangers sent to her office, and what is apparently some orchestrated drive. Some callers have been particularly abusive. Profanity-laced voicemails reveal the anger over the Kavanaugh nomination. And on top of that, we've got another story out. This is BizPak Review, that somehow accusing Democrats of literally trying to bribe her. If you vote against him, the money will be refunded to the donors. In other words, they're actually planning to raise money. If I vote against him, the money is refunded to donors. If I vote for him, the money is given to my opponent for the 2020 race. It's like, is this what we've now become? It's pretty scary. You know, 88% of financially successful people read at least 30 minutes per day. Now, reading is the ultimate secret to success, and lots of world-class successful people credit their success directly to reading. Now, if you're like me, the list of books you want to read or those people suggest you read is never ending, and it's always expanding. Now, the problem is there's no time to read, right? Well, our sponsor, Blinkist, has solved your long list of must-reads once and for all. Blinkist is the only app that takes thousands of best-selling nonfiction books and breaks them down to their most impactful elements so you can read or listen to them in under 15 minutes all on your phone. And with Blinkist, you will expand your knowledge and learn more in just 15 minutes than you can almost any other way. Plus, you can listen anywhere. Now, I just downloaded the Blinkist app. I love it. I like to listen when I'm in the car or when I have free time, if I'm just cooking dinner or something. It doesn't matter. Now, my personal recommendation, check out Greg Jarrett's new book, The Russian Hoax. Now, there's so much to know about this Russian investigation, and Blinkist, they make it simple and easy for you to get these critical elements from the book. 5 million people are now using Blinkist to expand their minds 15 minutes at a time, and you can get started today. And right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Hannity to start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled BLINKIST.com/Hannity to start your free 7-day trial. You can cancel at any time. Blinkist.com/Hannity.
So when you bring up an integrity issue, and it's interesting, you and the gentleman from Texas raised this in a way that almost, you know, approaches, it is insulting.
The gentleman, answer the question.
If you're going to make an accusation,
what I'm going to respond to is what I'm saying. I am here under oath. I am not lying. I have never lied under oath, and I never will. And so the insinuation, not even the insinuation, the direct comment that you somehow say you have an integrity issue is insulting. I take offense. It is incorrect. Nothing I've
said here
today. I
never mentioned your personal life. I just simply said the amount of time that you were spending on the taxpayer's dollar, wasting it when you were supposed to be doing your job, texting back and forth to the court, is a problem.
And sir, that's what I'm saying is,
and the gentleman has already answered that.
All right, that was Peter Strzok, News Roundup and Information Overload Hour, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program. Now, we have been blowing open every day all these new text messages. Just when you think you have all of the Strzok page text messages, well, you don't. Just like the correspondence with Orr and Steele, you don't. And slowly but surely, it's like a slow unpeeling of an onion layer by layer because they don't want to just give everybody everything. Now, I don't think that we're going to get the declassified, unredacted FISA memos 302s this week. Obviously, the hurricane has taken center stage as it should, as we got to keep our fellow Americans safe this week. But we do know that this is getting to be a bigger deal every day now that we have figured out that the FBI and DOJ were colluding in a media leak strategy. And this both happened before the election and after the election, one to stop Trump from becoming president, and then, of course, to undermine him when he becomes president. Sarah Carter last night breaking the story that just months before the election, it appeared that Strzok and Page were working and contributing to an op-ed about Russian election interference. And it said Lisa Page asking Strzok, but we are still writing the op-ed. Yes? And Peter Strzok responds, yes-ish. Then on September 5th, 3 days later, the Washington Post publishes a story about Russian interference. On the same day, Sarah reports that the former FBI lovebird shared a link to an article and Strzok wrote the following. Just read the article. We say a lot of the same things. I guess that's okay. Now, Strzok's lawyer is trying to make the case. Oh, no, he was only writing about stopping leaking. Okay. But then Page writes back. Yeah, but that's why ours is going to be need to be more folksy. So it's not like a news article. Well, that doesn't sound like they're withholding leaks, but I guess they have no problems insulting our intelligence. Now, you add those texts to what was already released the day before, that's Monday of this week, from Congressman Meadows, and we're getting a very clear picture of what's actually going on here, including in those Monday texts from Strzok to Page, and this took place on April 10th, 2017. I had literally just gone to find the phone to tell you that I want to talk to you about media leak strategy with the DOJ before you go. So now they want to talk about media leaking strategy between the FBI and the DOJ. This is getting a little nerve-wracking. Now, this is post-election. This is 2017. This is April 12th. 2 days later, Strzok warning Page that two damning articles are coming out with her namesake, Page, Lisa Page, about Carter Page. Then on April 22nd, which we originally thought was April 12th, it turned out it wasn't that day, Peter Strzok tells Page, article is out. Well done, Page. Doesn't seem like they're stopping leaking again. And that's what I've been telling you. A coordinated effort at the highest levels at the FBI and the DOJ to leak anti-Trump information to the press, both before the election to prevent him from getting elected and afterwards to destroy his presidency. And Strzok's lawyers out there saying the term media leak strategy in Mr. Strzok's text refers to a department-wide initiative to detect and stop leaks to the media. That's pretty breathtaking if you want to believe any of that nonsense. Now we have some other developments that are coming up today. And there is discussions. You've got three texts that will be fully released tonight between Strzok and Page, and how they're talking about the New York Times being angry with them and about a Washington Post scoop and a discussion they had about inaccuracies with one New York Times writer. And Strzok then is talking about how he told this particular New York Times guy that they basically were dealing in good faith with them and would raise some pretty serious concerns of the FBI in an ongoing investigation leaking to hurt the president. And especially considering what the stakes are here. All right, we're going to really tear this all down and what it means when you add this to all the information we had about 70 contacts, emails, text messages, handwritten notes, and meetings between Orr and Christopher Steele. And Orr became Steele's conduit
and they didn't want to get exposed together. Those were Steele's words, and they wanted firewalls built and were hoping that they would hold, and that Steele was passing on information through his conduit, Bruce Orr, the fourth highest ranking member of the DOJ, that he would pass on to the special counsel's office. Yeah, those messages exist too. Now one has to ask, what is the vulnerability here of all of these players in this? The one thing they all seem to have in common is they hate Trump. And joining us now, we have David Schoen, civil criminal rights attorney, Sarah Carter, investigative reporter, Fox News, Greg Jarrett, author of the number one best-selling book, The Russian Hoax. Thank you all for being with us. Let's start, Sarah, with you, because you're following this a little bit more closely than anybody, and we're going to get, I guess, these new messages out tonight that refer to the term sisters is used in there, and wouldn't that be FBI slang for the CIA, like sister agencies?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have to delve a little bit deeper and find out exactly, and this is going to require interviewing everybody involved again, because it appears that they were not being truthful at all. Peter Strzok in his testimony to Congress, others that were involved, like Lisa Page. So they're going to need to question them again. They're going to need to get to the bottom of this. And what we know now is that, yes, of course, the New York Times, the Washington Post, all the same players that we were talking about before, Sean, all of these people that were getting these apparent scoops, these apparent stories out of nowhere, these leaks that were derogatory and that spread disinformation about President Trump are now connected to those high-level officials at the FBI, and I believe also we'll find out at other agencies like the CIA. And remember, we've discussed this before because James Clapper has been outed. It was a story that we broke early in the year that Clapper was under suspicion by the House Intelligence Committee and other committees investigating for leaking information on the dossier to the New York Times and setting up that meeting with Comey, that briefing that Comey did with then-President-elect Trump and President Obama in order to get that information out into the media. I mean, this is seriously one of the biggest, most egregious acts against an administration, against a presidency in modern history. I mean, and this is coming from within their own, from within Washington, D.C. I mean, it's literally a silent coup. That is what intel sources have told me over and over again. There's no other way to describe this. And they utilized the media to make that happen.
Let's get your take from a legal standpoint. Leaking starts with James Comey, Greg Jarrett, but more importantly, with an ongoing investigation. But a lot of the information we know that they're leaking out is false propaganda, and the willing accomplices, of course, that they have in the media to go along with it.
Argued in my book, The Russia Hoax, the evidence I presented there is incontrovertible, and now we have more of it. There was leaking by Comey and his FBI, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, by James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence. John Brennan, CIA, we learned today, was also involved in these leaks, all of it with the goal of damaging Donald Trump with false evidence, which was based primarily on the dossier. And it's unconscionable for Peter Strzok's lawyer to put out, the way he did yesterday, a false statement trying to say, oh, no, my client is detecting and stopping leaks. That's disproven by the texts themselves. Just look at that one text. Article is out, exclaims Strzok to Page. Well done, Page. That's not stopping a leak. That's leaking. And the leak was designed to damage Donald Trump.
But if you look at the timing, this there was more than one period of leaking here. One was before the election and one is after the election.
Sure.
So one is designed to defeat Trump and the other is designed to destroy Trump. They never gave up.
It started on July 5th, 2016, when Christopher Steele, who composed the dossier, first met with Comey's FBI, and they leaked for more than a year thereafter. And the leaking continues still. And now we know why. Christopher Wray of the FBI, the director there, as well as Rod Rosenstein of the DOJ, has been obstructing this information from Congress because they know what they did was wrong and illegal, and this is a classic cover-up. Those guys need to go.
What do you think about it, David Schoen? And do you see illegality here and possible prosecution for them down the road?
Well, and I was thinking when you were laying out the case that this is the exact case that we should be hearing in this chronological order in a court of law, frankly. Sure, there's at a minimum obstruction of justice, but and which, you know, goes both ways. But in this case, it's certainly on their part. Look, I think that you made the point that we have this before and after the election. That's why those who have called for a special counsel are right, I think, unfortunately, because we see the money wasted on special counsels. But we need someone who's going to put an entire picture on the systemic context here. You know, you said before, this is not just the FBI, it's also the DOJ. Remember, we're still getting these emails out in dribs and drabs. That shouldn't be happening. You might recall, and I'm sure you will because you reported it at the time, the DOJ even stonewalled their own inspector general at the time. He had to put together his own forensic team to find these emails that the DOJ said they supposedly couldn't find. We still don't have the personal emails. You know, I'm not Spartacus, but I still call for full transparency and full disclosure of all of these emails. We have to have it. It can't keep coming out in pieces and have to examine the person without all of the evidence. You know, when Strzok, you replayed that bit when Strzok said he's never lied under oath. I wonder what that qualification meant. I also wondered whether maybe he didn't say crossies don't count at the time. We've got some major systemic problems here. I'm going to tell you, I think Sarah's breaking pieces, Greg's context with the book, and your reporting will go down in history for this period once this stuff finally comes out.
A lot of people are beginning to doubt as to whether or not what we're saying about the declassification of, for example, 302s and Gang of Eight material, getting out every Strzok page, email and text message, and then, of course, the FISA pages, the 20 pages that everybody seems to want to see, whether that's going to happen. We don't have control of that, but the chatter is really loud that this is all going to happen, and I would say probably it's sooner than later, but we'll take a break. We're doing this for the whole hour, Greg, David, and Sarah. All right, as we continue, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN is our number for the full hour now. We've got so much breaking news, new information, DOJ, FBI now colluding, conspiring to leak information to the press, both before President Trump got elected and then, of course, to destroy him after the election. We have more smoking gun information. Sarah, one thing everybody keeps asking me, what you and Sarah and Greg and David, you all keep talking about the declassification and these pages of the FISA memo are going to be unredacted and released to the public, and the 302s are going to be released to the public, and Gang of Eight information are going to be released to the public, and are we ever going to get all of the Strzok page emails, all of the contacts and information about Orrin Steele? My sources tell me, yeah, it's coming, but people are saying, well, are you guys just crying wolf? Why shouldn't we get the information? Where's Spartacus Cory Booker to help us?
Spartacus probably doesn't want this information coming out. I think people are, you know, impatient for a good reason. It's been over 19 months, and there's been no evidence of collusion, and all we keep getting is more and more evidence of collusion going the other way between the DOJ and the FBI, with Hillary Clinton and Christopher Steele and Fusion GPS, as well as Russian spies actually giving information to Christopher Steele and then Christopher Steele sharing that with the FBI, and the FBI so graciously sharing that now apparently with the rest of the country, so basically utilizing Russian disinformation. So I can understand why the American people are so frustrated. I can say, based on the sources that I've spoken with, just like you, Sean, I know you've got incredible sources. The sources that I've spoken with said this is absolutely going to happen. They will be declassifying these documents. Right now, of course, everybody is so concerned about the hurricane, and my hearts go out to, you know, everybody in North Carolina and everybody in the path of the hurricane. So I think that the White House is doing the right thing. They're taking action. They're putting the hurricane first. And I think after that, we will definitely get these documents. And you know what's going to happen after that, Sean? Somebody is going to have to call for a thorough investigation with the Department of Justice into what went on here. Because now, finally, we're starting to see all the pieces fit together, just like you said. And this is going to be one of the biggest. And remember, we said this over a year ago. This is the biggest political story in our modern history. And there needs to be a thorough investigation. People need to be held accountable for this. The Justice Department is the one that's supposed to be in charge of it. If it's not Jeff Sessions, it definitely needs to be somebody else.